In a world of increasingly stuffed newsstands, it's not enough to simply print some words and wait for the readers. Hungry magazine buyers crave good presentation, handsome photography, and considered typography. We'll meet the makers behind some of our favourites today on The Stack. From Midori House in London, this is The Stack, 30 minutes of print industry analysis. I'm Tom Edwards. Coming up in just a moment, we'll peel open the pages of a print title dedicated to typography itself.
It's about graphic design too, it's about type, and it's about kind of how much wider issues are affected by typography, whether you kind of notice that or not, whether that's like thinking that an ad is doing a great job or a terrible job, and I suppose looking at the way that different letter forms can kind of influence that.
First though, we touch down in Austria for a helping of the beautiful new food title All You Can Eat. Each issue is themed around a particular word. Issue one was fat, the second is foreign. Monocle's Fernando Augusto Pacheco spoke to the magazine's editor-in-chief, Tobias Müller, as he began work on issue three at his office in Vienna.
The title is actually, it's meant quite literal, like it should be about everything you can possibly eat. We try to have a very broad range of food-related and also drink-related topics. We're planning an all-you-can-drink issue. We're trying to write about topics that other magazines or other food magazines don't really cover, or we feel don't really cover. At least in the German-speaking world, or with German food magazines, there's a lot of magazines about high-end food and about very fancy and expensive food. A lot of magazines just with what I would call housewife recipes. But in between, there's not much. There's not much about what people actually eat every day. And this is a little bit what we're trying to do here. And that's where the title comes from, All You Can Eat.
And I love that in the first issue you chose, you know, fat. But there's so many things that, you know, if you think about it, you know, the ingredient, fat, there's so many things you can talk about. And as I'm browsing through, you know, you talk about new restaurants, recipes, you know, more information about fat itself. It's really remarkable. How did you decide to do fat as your first issue?
Well, I think fat is one of the most important things in food, and it's what makes food tasty, and it's one of the ingredients that carries a lot of flavor, so it seemed like the obvious choice. And it also, for many years, it was kind of frowned upon and thought to be unhealthy and not good for you, and there's a whole industry trying to sell you products that are fat-free. This is changing a little bit now. Sugar is the new bad guy. Fat is having a comeback, which I find very, very good. Yeah, I think food without fat would be just boring and uninteresting. So, yeah, it was an obvious choice.
Tobias, I don't know much about your previous career. Were you involved in the world of food, or is this something new for you?
I'm a food writer. I write for various German and Austrian and Swiss magazines and newspapers. I'm a freelancer. So this project we started was a little bit also the idea to have a spot for all the stories we love, but we can't find a proper place for. Because if you talk to other freelancers, at least I have the impression very often, the stories they care most about, they have a hard time trying to find a magazine to publish them because they might be, yeah, slightly, I don't know, not democratic enough, or that's just not the right niche for it. So this magazine is a bit our try to give you the platform.
Tobias, I would like to know more about the business model of this magazine. It's quite, you know, a very nice product, nice paper. Do you have a lot of advertisers, or is it more subscription-based? Or perhaps you can just buy on the newsstand?
You can buy at the newsstand in Austria and in specialized shops in Germany and Switzerland. Mostly subscription-based, and it's also at the moment only possible because people work for it for very, very little or no money at all. So without this, it wouldn't be possible to have it in this quality, with this paper, with this printing quality, with this format, this size. We do have advertising. We would need more advertising in the long run, that's for sure. But for the time being, our business model is to work for very little money.
Tell us what's in the latest issue.
The latest issue is the foreign issue. The first one was the fat issue, so the second one is the foreign issue. It's not about an ingredient like the first one, but more about a broad concept. When we were trying to put the issue together, we only realized how broad that concept is. So we needed a focus point, and then it ended up being that there's a lot about Chinese food and Japanese food in there, just because we think that these kinds of cuisines at the moment are very important and very influential in the West, and we love to eat them also. There's quite a bit about African food in there, which I find is vastly underrepresented. In most food media, you hardly ever read about it. So we have a long story about home brewing in Africa. We have a story about camel milk in Ethiopia. Of course, there's a bit about German food in there, which for an Austrian is quite a foreign concept as well.
And, you know, of course you shouldn't review too much, but are you already working on issue 3?
Yes, we're working on issue 3, and we hope it will come out before Christmas. It will be the imperial issue. It's, again, a very broad topic, but we kind of like it because it makes possible to put lots of different stories in there and have lots of different angles and lots of different writers from all over the world.
Where are you based again?
I am based in Vienna, and our art director, Peter Schmidt, is based in Linz, which is a 2 hours drive from Vienna.
That's quite interesting that you're based in Vienna, because I believe at Monaco we wrote a story a few years ago saying that Vienna is becoming, you know, quite a media city in a way. Well, not becoming, it was already like this. So how would you say is the print market in Austria in general? Of course, you publish a magazine there, but how do you see when you go to the newsstand? Do you think it's kind of a healthy market overall?
The print market in Austria, it's a very difficult market because Austria is so small. There's not many people living here. It's a population of about 8 million. Of course, there's the vast German market. So you have, with German speakers, you have a market of about 100 million people in Europe, which is much, much bigger. But that's dominated also by German media and by German media products. So when it comes to magazines, I think Austria is not a very interesting market. There's not many Austrian magazines. There is quite a few newspapers and a lot of regional newspapers, daily newspapers, which I guess has historical reasons. But I would say that the magazine market in Austria is dominated by German products.
For true devotees of the printed medium, there's perhaps no detail that brings quite as much satisfaction and joy as great typography. As the Type Directors Club says, a good typeface can mark the fine line between brand difference and indifference. Someone who no doubt agrees with that assertion is Emily Gosling, the editor of Type Notes magazine. And I'm delighted to say Emily is here with me in Studio One on the Stack. Emily, first up, congratulations on Type Notes. Issue number one. What a thing of beauty this is. And I'll just give our listeners a quick sort of browse through the pages. How would you describe what this is? Is it a celebration of typography? Is it a celebration of graphic design? Is it analysis? It's a journal dedicated to those things. How would you sort of sum up what it is?
I think it's kind of all of those things, really. So it's published by Fontsmith, who are a type foundry. So it came about because they had been running a blog for a while where their designers had been writing some quite complex, quite technical analyses of various characters or the way that type's used. And I think that sort of content was very much like for a typographer. Like there's lots of quite complicated words in there about things like dagger and double dagger. Lots of kind of little points that you wouldn't perhaps be that interested in.
Which is deeply interesting for the connoisseurs. Yeah. But I sense you want to maybe, broaden the appeal, this sort of thing.
That's it. And then when it came to kind of putting the magazine together, hopefully it's about graphic design too. It's about type and it's about kind of how much wider issues are affected by typography, whether you kind of notice that or not. So whether that's like watching a film and looking at the credits or thinking that an ad is doing a great job or a terrible job. And I suppose looking at the way that different letter forms can kind of influence that.
And tell us a bit about then your sort of editorial process on this issue one of Type Notes. Was it a question of saying, right, okay, it needs to look arresting. We obviously need to feature loads of great typography. We want to hear from some of the great writers, some of the great minds. You've mentioned a couple of people already who writes supremely well on this. How did you go about actually kind of designing the content, I guess, of the first issue?
Our designers are a brilliant pair of people called The Counter Press, David and Elizabeth, who played a really important role in, I guess, shaping not only kind of the design of the magazine, but the content as well. And I suppose one of the key things was to establish a really nice rhythm where it's not too text heavy in one place. You've got quite a nice, hopefully there's a lot of room for things to breathe and a kind of nice mixture of various like visually led features and then much more kind of deeper analysis of like you mentioned with the advertising one. So
I'm mindful, I'm always told by typographers when I speak to them that the white space is more important than anything else that's there, which I guess is one of those truisms, isn't it, of the art.
Yeah, and I think just as a reader as well, like you don't want to be kind of confronted with too much, like a barrage of information all in one go, especially when it's a magazine about typography. You've got to let that kind of speak for itself in one sense, but also you've got to make sure that you perhaps don't notice it. I think that's one of the nice things about good type is that you just think that looks great. You don't think there is a lovely letter. It's not kind of saying too much. So, I suppose it was about getting a mixture of the really technical things and then kind of looking more broadly at how type affects a particular design project or an art project or things that perhaps we see all the time. Like, there's a nice feature about a guy who has an Instagram looking at quite rare record covers. I think there's a lot of like old disco and funk and stuff in there, which is just so lovely to look through. And it really does make you, like, I think having put this magazine together, then you suddenly notice Type everywhere. I find myself constantly screenshotting credits when I'm watching something on YouTube and sending them to myself. Like,
but on that point, it's interesting because you mentioned sort of what's on Instagram, this sort of thing. For me, there's something about looking at great Type and people talking about typography, you know, on the printed page, which definitely unequivocally elevates it to I don't know, a better level almost of understanding.
Yeah.
Is that, am I just a kind of, because I'm a bit of a Luddite, I'm a traditionalist, but that must be particularly delightful for a journalist like yourself to make something that is physical, is tactile, all those old things, you know, the haptic experience of actually touching the pages. Yeah. Presumably that it's the best way still to really understand typography,
beyond
even looking at screens.
Yeah, I'd like to think so. And I think that's the nice thing about kind of magazines more generally, is that it gives you a different understanding of something that you're used to being kind of constantly bombarded with. So I think the designers were really clever with the way that they, for instance, with this Type on Film feature, they've kind of cut off the film as if it's kind of going around in a loop. And you don't realise that your head is suddenly making that connection between the fact that a letterform is broken off with the fact that that letterform is finished somewhere else. It's all those kind of little mind games. They're sort of
more tricks.
Yeah,
it's all smoke. It's full of smoke and mirrors,
isn't it, Joyce?
And clearly the reception's been very good, because I gather we don't need to reveal loads of information, but I gather we can look forward to another issue.
We can.
Presumably, I mean, that's again very exciting. Are you one of those editors who's probably already had an issue two full of ideas in your head even while issue one was still going?
There's a lot of notes on my phone. Like I said, there's a lot of screenshots sitting in like various little folders.
Now, you mentioned your sort of general love of magazines and all things typographical, and of course it's the stack. You have a stack of other titles here. Let's rattle through some of these and tell me about some of the things you've brought in. And are they things that you like, admire? Are they things maybe only that you despise? Either is welcome. Where should we start? What have you got with
you here? I'll start with Crass, which is a really nice magazine from Australia, which I think uses Type really beautifully. It feels quite weird kind of trying to describe how something looks.
It's a bit of a challenge. But well, let's describe for our listeners. It's a sort of, what would you call it? I mean, it's a kind of reasonably large format.
Yeah, kind of quite thick. It's almost exclusively Type. And I think that's a really brave thing to do, to have a cover which is purely typographical. It's quite an unusual typeface. It's a bespoke typeface developed by an Australian designer called Simon Pierce, and it's kind of a really strange version of like a traditional like German black letter sort of font, which I think is quite interesting because you associate that with, I don't know, like the Nazis, and you associate that with like heavy metal music, and then suddenly you're seeing a lot of designers kind of tweaking that and making it into something that feels like incredibly contemporary.
Or you think about those sort of very austere mastheads on, say, a German broadsheet newspaper.
Yes,
but this
exactly.
is in pretty lurid, day glow sort of red on a blue background. So no mistaking it for a German periodical.
No, absolutely. But I just think they do some really clever stuff with it. Like throughout the whole magazine, they've got like a huge range of different typefaces. A lot of them are bespoke ones as well. And they just use it in a really, really clever way, almost like as visual features in themselves. So you'll have like one spread, which is almost completely empty, bar like one little square of Type, kind of like a concrete poetry sort of effect, really, which I think is really, really brave and really interesting. And
that's truly, I mean, that really is letting the Type and the typography speak for itself, which, as you say, requires a certain editorial boldness. Do you sense that actually that tide is changing somewhat? Actually, whoever's, you know, the publishers who maybe might have been a little reticent about that even a few years ago are kind of beginning to understand that, hey, you can make a really great magazine by doing that. It's a question of just sticking to having the courage of your convictions.
Yeah,
really.
I guess the other major one would be Riposte, which has been doing that for quite a long time, hasn't it? And maybe, I don't know, I think a lot of people have looked to that magazine and thought they're doing a really great job. So maybe there's like the Riposte effect.
The Riposte effect, I like it. Where the bold lead, others will surely follow. What else have you got with you today?
So the second one I'll talk about is a magazine called Sabbat, which is for the modern witch. They've just launched their third issue. I've got the second one here. But
This is chunky, again,
it's very
to help
chunky.
Our listeners visualise it.
It's very chunky, and it has... They do a really interesting thing with the spine, which is when you look at the spine one way, you see kind of a dotted image, and then when you look at it the other way, you see a weird like fetus.
Okay.
Because this is the mother issue, they have a different theme for every issue, and then they've just done the third one, which is the crone issue, which does something similar. And unfortunately, that's the last in the trilogy, and they won't be doing any more. And then it's kind of got like an embossed circle on the front, which is completely created from Type. The Type along the other bit of the spine is like layered down, almost like it's falling down a step.
Mm.
And I think what the reason I wanted to talk about this one is just because when something's in print rather than on screen, it just creates a completely different experience. And I feel like this is a magazine that would never be able to exist on screen.
Well, and probably our listeners can hear.
Yeah, it's very rustly.
Well, and there's so many different paper stocks and formats going on here. Wow, it looks like a real labour of love. Do you know anything about the people behind this one? Or
so the editor's a girl called Elizabeth Crone. I'm not too sure what she does otherwise. And the designer is someone called Clebo Raphael de Campos, whoever. I'm really sorry if that's pronounced terribly. But I don't know, they obviously like spend a huge amount of time considering how a feature will work visually and how type comes into that. And they're a magazine that like lists all the typefaces they use, which is really nice if you're kind of geeky about that sort of thing.
Indeed, which we all are. So another one celebrate. That's pretty arresting. I can't help, my eye cannot but be drawn to the final title. Explain yourself.
I've got That's Life, but I could have chosen like Pick Me Up or Take a Break or Chat or any of those.
And maybe, I don't know, because I guess we've got quite a lot of international listeners.
Yeah.
If you imagine, I mean, where do these, what is the rarefied position on the UK newsstand that these ones occupy? How would you sum that up in a word or two?
I guess it's for nanas that like scandals.
That's good. That's good, yeah.
So they're real life magazines. So your typical story will be, well, I can just pick one of these actually. My shock at rat bonked in. Oh no, my shock at who rat bonked in his van. So that's someone, that's a woman who's furious because her partner was cheating on her in a van that she'd been paying the insurance on.
Oh, yeah, and it's the insurance. That's the detail that swings it. But what about these? Because in terms of, I don't know, graphic design, the commercial art of the cover and the topography, it basically just looks like an explosion in a type foundry.
Exactly.
What does your very well-trained eye make of this? Can you tolerate it?
I mean, I'm like a huge fan of these magazines, in not like a guilty pleasure way, but I absolutely love them. And what I found really interesting about this one, the reason I brought this in was not just to like talk about how much I love like other people's misery, I suppose, but just because you see a lot of this, I think in grad shows in particular, you started seeing this kind of like hideous aesthetic being used quite a lot in a very like trendy way. I think I was first noticing it maybe 7 or 8 years ago, people were using it for like gig posters and stuff. A lot of like the anti-folk scene seemed to be using it for their posters. And now you see it a lot in kind of, a lot of student projects, a lot of grad projects. And I guess in the same way that like Richard Turley with MTV was using the kind of mad, crazy like GIF internet language for his idents and stuff, you're seeing this, I think, in print, in quite out there, you know, trendy graphic design. And I just think there's something so interesting in that if you saw this on the newsstand, you'd probably walk straight past it. But if you saw it in a grad show at the RCA, you'd probably be like, wow, that's very brave.
That's striking. Emily Gosling, editor of Type Notes, thanks for coming to see us on
Thank
the stack.
You. Cheers.
And now to Southeast Asia to delve into the world of a beautiful literary journal called Mekong Review, bringing attention to the talents of writers in the region. Founded by Minbui Jones, the quarterly publication was launched at the end of 2015 at a book festival in Cambodia. Since then, it's been sold in various major cities in Southeast Asia and Australia, with ever-growing plans for expansion. Monocle's Fernando Augusto Pacheco spoke to Minbui Jones.
The magazine is about the literatures and cultures of the five countries that the Mekong, the mighty Mekong River flows through, that is Myanmar, Thailand, Laos, Cambodia, and Vietnam. These are the mainland Southeast Asia. And they share a common history, a common culture, and many things that food, architecture, music, there are many things that join these countries together. And for the most part of the 20th century, they've been ruined and destroyed by war and conflict, either civil or cold war, and political upheaval. This is almost the first time in a generation in which the whole region is at some kind of peace, enjoying some prosperity. You know, most people overseas, say in the UK or in the rest of Europe and America and Australia, often think of Thailand and Laos and Cambodia and Vietnam as a holiday destination, a cheap tropical escape, nice cheap street food and the constant political stories that a lot of Western media pick on, you know, either it's the political mayhem in Cambodia and so on. But it's more than that. There's a thriving literary culture within all these countries, and it hasn't been given enough attention to by the rest of the world. And this is what the Mekong Review hopes to do.
To give a voice to those people as well, right? To give a voice for local authors as well.
Absolutely. And they're fantastic material that's been produced from those countries. Each of those countries produces a wealth of literature that has a very distinctive flavor. Say, for instance, in Myanmar, poetry is very strong, or say in Vietnam, the short story is particularly strong. They have such a penchant and a history, a long heritage with the short story form. And it's wonderful for me too, because I'm discovering this as I work on this publication.
Also, I have a question. You know, the paper looks quite beautiful, the Mekong Review as well. There's a beautiful illustration on the cover. It's a very well-thought product as well. At the same time, you're also translating, you know, those literature reviews, those poems and all this material. So was that your intention as well for the market of your magazine, not only for Southeast Asia, but for the rest of the world as well?
Well, in fact, when I produced this magazine, I didn't have any grand ambition. I just had this desire to produce this magazine. It's been bubbling away in my head for a long time when I was living in Cambodia for 7 years. And when it came out rather quickly. I produced this magazine within 4 weeks. And I didn't think about whether there would be a second issue or where it would go. And I didn't look at the market. I knew there was... Certainly there was a supply. There were so many writers and artists all traveling, walking around Southeast Asia, all wanting to do something to convey what they've seen, what they've heard, and what they've experienced. And so it was easy to produce the magazine because there was a lot of contributors out there. But I didn't know whether it's the market. But when we produced the first issue and the reaction was so phenomenal, people started to subscribe, and it was... sold very quickly, and then we had enough money to produce the second issue, and then third, and the fourth, and the fifth, and the sixth, and the seventh, and now we're on to our eighth. Firstly, we distributed the magazine in Cambodia, where I was living at the time, and then the next issue we went to Vietnam, Thailand, Myanmar, now we're in Malaysia, in Singapore, and also in Australia, and as I mentioned before, a bookshop in London. Our next issue, we will add Hong Kong to our another country outlets that we will be in.
Where are you from, and where are you based, Min?
I'm based in Sydney. I have just returned from Sydney. I've been living in Southeast Asia for a while. I was born in Vietnam, and I came to Australia as a refugee. And I've been living here for a long time, 39 years.
Well, I want to know more about producing, you know, a magazine in Southeast Asia as well. There's an interesting story. Apparently, in the latest issue, you got dead insects between the pages. Tell us a bit more about that.
Well, it's very precarious producing a magazine or anything in Cambodia, because it's a country that's slowly emerging from a fairly traumatic last 3 or 4 decades of civil war. The printer that we use is a very small family-owned printer on the outskirts of Phnom Penh, near the airport. And it's a vast warehouse, and they use very old machines. It's very difficult to... And I don't speak Khmer. The person I work with, her English is okay. And so we communicate with hands as much as with language. And sometimes, during certain times of the year, you have... a lot of insects in Cambodia, especially just before the monsoon, these swarms of insects, I don't know what they're called, but they are attracted to the lights. And so in a printer such as hers, there are these big white lights on the ceiling and also around the warehouse. And there was just one day when our magazine was being printed, and these insects just came swarming through the door, and they were flying in between the pages, and the pages kept on folding. They were folded as part of the magazine.
A little surprise for the readers.
Yes. I think there was readers in Thailand, especially, caught most of it. They found a lot of insects in between the pages. But it wasn't so horrific. I saw them. They're just lovely transparent wings that were just left between the pages.
I mean, I'm curious, for example, in your latest issue, I believe the seventh issue of your magazine, which sort of themes are covered in the issue? I'm a bit curious. If you could give just a little overview.
Yes, sure. The outstanding piece is an interview that we did with the Pulitzer Prize-winning author Viet Thanh Nguyen, who wrote The Sympathizer, The Refugees, among others. And that was done after the Refugees, his most latest book, was released in February. And we followed him and interviewed him in Orange County. This particular issue is Vietnam-centric, this one. We have a lot of Vietnam-related pieces here. And this is almost accidental. It's never meant to be. You know, when you work on a publication such as this, when you can only print what you've got, and so we're limited. I commission a lot of things, but half of them fall through. So much of our content depends on the books that are released, new books that have just come out, and also some of the big events that's taking place in some of those countries. This is a literary magazine with a political edge. It has to be. We're talking about Southeast Asia here. Politics is really important to this part of the world. And you just can't have, and literature is embedded in the political culture in countries like Vietnam and Myanmar, where politics and journalism and the media and literature all go together, and it's always been the case. And so you can't really do literature without talking about politics. And so you find this throughout all our seven issues so far, that politics is there in the background. However, we don't try to be, obviously, we're not topical magazines, we don't cover events blow by blow. We try to explain and analyze and give those events some historical context, something we add another layer to an issue that hopefully will be useful to readers out there.
And that is all we have time for on this week's programme. Thanks to our producers, Ben Ryland, and to Fernando Augusto Pacheco. He was busy this week. And of course, to our editor, Claire Urban. Comments or queries are welcome. Why not clog up Fernando's inbox yet further? He's on fp@monocle.com. I encourage you to drop him a line. I'm Tom Edwards. This is The Stack. Thank you very much for tuning in.